I think you should listen to this.
This better not be another damn Russian spy job.
Boys from air traffic res say the skies are clear.
It's the real thing. The radio signal from another world.
Mr. President,
our intelligence tells us the object has settled into a stationary orbit. Part of it has broken off into nearly three dozen other pieces. Smaller than the whole, sir. Yet over 15 miles in width themselves.
Where are they heading?
They should be entering our atmosphere within the next 25 minutes.
Let's just get there as quickly as
possible.
What's
the rush, Ma?
Think we'll get to Washington and won't be there?
It is confirmed. The unexplained phenomenon is headed for Moscow.
That's life in chess. First, they're positioning their pieces, using this one signal to synchronize their efforts.
And then what?
Checkmate.
Oh my God.
I really don't think they flew 90 billion light years to start a fight.
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
Oh, God, I hope they bring back Elvis!
There's gonna be a lot of frightened people out there.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
Something you want to add to this briefing, Captain Hiller?
No, sir. Just a little anxious to get up there and whoop E.T.'s ass, that's all.
Welcome to another episode of the BSR Show. We are the Black Series Rebels. With me, as always, is my boy, Stephen Ellis.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
And we'd all be dead if it wasn't for my Cisco kid.
I'd just like to say, on a personal note, after being abducted by aliens 10 years ago, I can't wait to talk about this movie now, finally.
And just landed his crop duster plane after crop dusting the wrong set of crops. Our special guest this week, Jermaine Lucier. How's it going, buddy?
I'm here to bring these sons of bitches down.
Well, I mean, it makes perfect sense. I'm assuming Steve is a programming genius and he's going to slap this baby up on July 4th. The ultimate Independence Day movie, ID4 Independence Day. Starring Jeff Goldblum, Will Smith, the whole nine. Jermaine, why Independence Day? Why this flick? Why pick it?
For me, it's very formative for me. It was the first movie I ever bought advance tickets to see. Because I saw that Super Bowl trailer. I just followed it. I'm like, what's going on with this movie? Bought tickets like a week out. And you saw it. I saw it at 16 years old. And I feel like at that point, even though I love Star Wars, Indiana Jones and everything, Jurassic Park, this just felt so friggin' mega, just so much bigger, just so epic. The story from beginning to end, the ships, and like I just fell in love with it. And I've watched it, you know, basically like two times a year, every year since. And, you know, and we got it 25 years old as of this week. And so, yeah, it felt like the movie to play.
What about you, Cisco? What was your chemistry like the first time Independence Day entered your life?
Saw it in the theater, was looking forward to it majorly. I don't recall buying advance tickets, although maybe I did. I feel like we probably waited outside in a long line to get into the AMC near our house. And boy, was it worth it. I mean, this movie has everything that you need, especially at that time when it came out. I just remember being blown away. Will Smith became the megastar that he, you know, is today because of this movie. And Jeff Goldblum is just all kinds of cool. And the aliens were freaking creepy and and cool looking. So yeah, man, Independence Day ID4 is a real banger, and I'm stoked to talk about it.
What about you, Steve? I know you've probably got some Independence Day Fangoria magazine story. I know this one was got to be on your list of big movies for Stevie.
This came out the summer between eighth grade and ninth grade for me. This was one of those movies that I have a movie theater, or at least we used to, outside the drive-ins that I can see out. I'm up in San Jose right now. I can actually see the drive-in screens, and if I wanted to, I could listen to it from this room I'm in. But there also was a 16 theater multiplex there, and my buddy Chris and I used to walk up there all the time, and his mom always was throwing $20 bills at him, and me, I'm like going up to my dad's dresser and stealing all his quarters to get $4.50 to go get the matinee screening of a movie. And we walked up there to see it because the year before, I feel like we had snuck into Bad Boys, and I was all about Will Smith at that point. And two hot dogs later that my buddy bought me, a large cherry Coke, and I think I watched this movie 10 times that summer. This was one of those ones that eventually ended up on a show called Movie Magic that I used to be obsessed with, that they showed how they did all the special effects. This was a big one for me. This was a big summer blockbuster tentpole, needed to know everything about it, one of those movies. What about you, Alex?
What year did this come out, my experts? 96. I was going to say 96. So I would have been 10 when this came out. Now, this isn't the first summer blockbuster I remember seeing, but it's the first summer blockbuster I remember there being hype around. Yeah. I was too young to recognize the hype for Jurassic Park, too young to recognize the hype for Terminator 2. This is the first time I really remember being like, on July 4th, we have to see the movie about July 4th, right, Dad? And my dad's like, oh, we already got tickets. Don't worry. This was the good theater, not the one under the freeway. Because, Jermaine, we had three theaters in my hometown. And this is like, this was a tent pole flick. But, like, we had the other two, one that was by an elephant bar. What was it? An El Torito, I think is what it was next to. And then even one that worse. Was under a bridge. Even worse. And then one that was under a bridge. And this was at the good Galaxy 8 cinemas before we had megaplexes in my hometown. And I remember just loving it. And I'm not going to be the voice of dissent because I still like this movie, but I'm going to do my best to stay in 10-year-old kid brain while we talk about this movie and not be 35-year-old brain that was rewatching it last night with bronchitis. So I'm going to
you'll be surprised because I have some thoughts on like it today as opposed to watching it in 96.
It's one of these movies that it's just a special product of 1996 and led the way for such an interesting genre of blockbusters that I know we're all going to talk about over the next hour. But I'm really excited to talk about it. It's the perfect July 4th movie. And with all of that being said, Steve, why don't we take it to another episode of the Midnight Movie Club, Independence Day. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. All right, let's go around the horn. I'm going to just start busting out the tough questions. Jermaine, where does Independence Day rank in the pantheon of blockbusters for you?
Man, I mean, it's pretty much up there for all the reasons we all just said. You know, like, we're all of a certain age that came up in the 90s. And in the 90s, like, this was the blockbuster. I mean, the Jurassic Park was something different. It was a huge blockbuster everybody saw, you know.
It's Spielbergian, and it's different. It's like...
Yeah, and you kind of I could read the novel, you know. I heard about Michael Crichton, and like Batman was huge, and Terminator 2. This was totally new, you know. It felt original, and like it was long, and there were other long movies that came out, obviously, but I felt like sitting down for a 2.5 hour, you know, sci-fi extravaganza, what felt like new at the time. So like, I don't know, for me it ranks really high up there when it comes to these like mega blockbusters, just because like I said, it just feels so much bigger than all these other movies. Like, I loved Twister and I loved Mission Impossible. But those
Twister. Now we're talking.
Yeah. Awesome. But this is just like, I mean, the ships are the size of planets and cities, and you never saw that. It was an UFO. Roland Emmerich is like, no. We got to do this right.
And this just shit goes over all of DTLA. I'm talking crazy. A shadow over all of downtown Los Angeles.
Or all of Manhattan.
And they can see it from San Diego, which is like where Will Smith is basically, right?
Oh, is that where he is?
No, I think he's in the valley. I think he's in the valley because he's looking down at it. But El Toro,
he drives to San Diego, but I think he's like straight up.
He couldn't have been that far.
I don't know that he's driving that far during a fucking alien invasion. You know those. We got to talk a little bit about the traveling during the alien invasion.
Yeah.
But okay, that's a great place to start. Cisco, where does Independence Day rank in the pantheon of summer blockbusters for you?
Man, that's a question I haven't thought about. You know, there are so many different variables, I think, that have to come into play because, you know, if it's like pure nostalgia, then it's up there. If it's like, does it hold up to today's standards of blockbusters, then it probably isn't even like top 10, really. So I don't know. That's tough. But, you know, in my heart, I have a love for it. And I really enjoy watching it every time I do. You know, like putting it on last night, I didn't like doze off or, you know, go on my phone or anything the entire movie. I watched the entire thing and enjoyed it from beginning to end. And, you know, I think that there are some really, really strong things that still hold up today that are really enjoyable and some stuff that doesn't really. You know, that's okay.
Totally. All right, Steve, upon your rewatch, where does Independence Day rank in your pantheon of blockbusters or just thoughts in general on the film?
I'm not going to lie, and I don't know that my chemistry, because we talk a lot about chemistry on this show, I don't know that my chemistry was in the right place when I did my rewatch recently, because this is a movie I watch every year. My wife absolutely, like, her favorite genre of movie is disaster movie. So this is a movie that's on all the time. Oh, and BT Dub, she's a huge Will Smith fan. But I left this most recent viewing kind of bummed out, and I don't want to bring the show down, but I was kind of bummed out, and I was kind of like, wow, this is not how I remember it. Now, mind you, I watch this movie every year, so obviously my chemistry was kind of off. But even with that being said, this movie ranks pretty high because you have to understand something. I feel like we had Jurassic Park in 94, right? And then the following summer, not a traditional summer blockbuster, big, big summer hit Forrest Gump the following summer, followed by Batman Forever, I feel like, the next summer, and then Independence Day, you know? And so this was a huge and informative chunk of time in my blockbuster popcorn summer movie going experience. And it's a movie I always own. And, you know, it ranks pretty high up there, even though this last time I had some thoughts that were not of the positive. At the end of the day, I look back on this movie and I look back on it fondly, and you know, I'm going to watch it again this weekend for July 4th. Cause that's, that's the tradition.
What you do.
That's what we
do. That's what you do. You're going to be in a better headspace. I have a feeling you're going to text back. All right. I was wrong. I feel happier about this movie. I feel we talked a little bit about this on Terminator 2, and we were talking about penultimate 90s movies, which is the penultimate 90s movie. Is it Terminator 2? Is it Jurassic Park? I mean, honestly, is it Forrest Gump? And I think you could put Independence Day into the conversation for penultimate 90s blockbuster. I think it birthed kind of a new genre, not a new genre as much as like a new standard of blockbuster, which is like that, no pun intended, like July 4th weekend blockbuster that's like, chances are it's just okay, but everyone's gonna fucking go see it. I'm talking like your Armageddons, your Twisters, your Volcanoes, and it kind of spawns this like larger than life movies that you're gonna be concussed when you leave the theater. Like, it's gonna pummel the shit out of your brain for the next like 2 hours. It's gonna have fucking branded popcorn tubs, and you're gonna be able to get shit for it like two months leading up to the movie. And for me, Independence Day is kind of when I think of those 90s movies, it's kind of the original, and it kind of sets the pace for what blockbusters become pre like superhero and franchise space. It just like, they're these larger than life stories. Jermaine, did you gravitate towards movies like this after Independence Day, or is Independence Day kind of singular in that?
No, I definitely gravitated towards it. I think I always did. All those movies you mentioned, I saw and freaked out about and bought the posters and t-shirts, you know, and I was consumer 101. I still am, you know, but this one, like you said, it set a new standard for the spectacle, you know, like, yeah, Jurassic Park, again, the effects are way better and the story is way more emotional. It's a better movie, of course. But like, yeah, the scope of this one, so good. The way it touches on everything. You got the humor and you got the comedy, and the story has so many characters. It's like a Robert Altman movie, but Roland Emmerich, you know what I mean? And like, yeah. And like, and I'm very curious to see what Steve's new thoughts were. Yeah, because when I watched it again recently, I kind of had the opposite effect, where I think I always watch it with my brain off, you know, the summer blockbuster, chomping the popcorn. But I really honed in on it when I watched it yesterday. And I found a couple things there, and I was like, you know what? It's very obvious, but I never really honed in on it. And now I really kind of, like, as a 41-year-old man, appreciate it on a deeper level than I did when I first saw it.
Okay, so what are some of those moments? Hit us with some of those moments.
Yeah, well, I mean, the two things, really. It's like, the first one is, you know, when the movie came out, I was 16 years old, and I didn't really know about, like, the evils of the world, really, you know? We had been in, like, the Gulf War, but I didn't really know what that meant, or Iran-Contra. But now, like, we've lived through a pandemic and crazy political shit and all these things, and I know that people hate each other. And this is a movie where, you know, like, everyone is forced to love each other.
Mm-hmm.
No matter about their skin tone or their sexuality or their economic place, everyone has to come together to go. And like, when you listen to the president's speech in this, I always was like, oh, we're celebrating our Independence Day. I never really grasped from it that the main point is like, it's no longer an American holiday. It's a holiday for the world. It's called Independence Day, not because of July 4th in America, it's because the movie is about a new Independence Day. Mm-hmm. And I never got that. So I thought that was like amazing and really kind of poignant for like the time right now. And the other thing is that the movie for me is really about loss or losing, more so failure, where everything they have, the movie works for two, because they fail at everything, you know, like they try to communicate, they fail. They try to bring them down, they fail. Even in the final scene, they think they failed before he gives it one more shot. And that's when it works so well, because you're just used to them losing and failing. And so I was like, man, we're in a world today where I can go on YouTube and become an instant star and make millions of dollars, you know, if I hit the right thing. Like, and nobody knows how to lose anymore, you know? And this is a movie about like, man, if you lose, you just got to keep trying, because it can be great. And I think that's why the ending of the movie is so good and the movie works so well, is like, there's no way they're going to win. Right. There's no way they're ever going to win. And then they win. And so, yeah, those are two things that I took out of this movie this time that I was really excited about.
That's actually, let's riff on that for a little bit. You really bring up a really interesting point. Cisco, when you were watching this on your rewatch, did sort of like looking at it through the haze of 2020 sort of add a different layer for you this rewatch?
Yeah, a little bit. And I think also just being older, you know, being like a more seasoned adult who has, you know, experienced more things and seen more of the world, just like Jermaine was saying. And just to piggyback on one of the things that he mentioned is that, like, I don't think that there's a movie that gets you as like, I don't know that patriotic is the right word, because it's not about just like being an American and gung-ho American, but like really feeling a sort of like community with humanity in another way. Like, I think that Top Gun has this like rah-rah like go America thing that like is really fun and like I still dig a lot, but this one is much grander, right? Especially when you get to the end of the movie where like, you know, this is like a thing that I had never noticed before. And maybe it's just because I never paid attention during this little montage when the different countries are coming together for the plan. But you see like like Israel and Pakistan like working together. You know what I mean? Yes. You see the two flags and you're just like, that's like, I never would have gotten that significance in 96, but like now, obviously I get it. Right. And, you know, seeing that kind of stuff just like portrayed on screen, even it's fictional and I get it. You know what I mean? Like that's an idealized version of like what might happen if like the aliens actually come, but like instilling that sort of hope that hopefully we could get to that place is, excuse me, something that I really connected with on this viewing. And one of the things that I really enjoyed, and to bring back to what Jermaine said about the president's speech, it really is, I think, and I was thinking this when it happened, like probably one of the best speeches of all time in any movie.
Like, oh, it's apex. There's only two presidential speeches that I would pit against each other, and that's American President and this. Those two go head to head in ultimate American president speeches, and I think this one might just barely edge it out, but it's close. Today, dude, we celebrate. Pullman, yeah,
he's going ham for this. Dude, I mean, he's like, he's so good in this movie, honestly.
Going
like
for the Oscar,
man, I love his performance. I just like, I, you know, I love Bill Pullman for being I always think of him as a Lone Star from Spaceballs. Like that's my number one thing with him, but this is number two for sure.
So do you guys, are you, Jermaine, you might be, cause you know, you're pretty into this stuff, but you guys aware of the whole thing with Independence Day, the title and the original title and how they actually added Bill Pullman and was it Dean Devlin, right, Jermaine?
He's the co-writer and producer.
They added at the end that whole thing about the last tagline of that speech, this is our Independence Day and whatnot, because the original title was supposed to be Doomsday, but they wanted Independence Day. But 20th Century Fox and Universal, someone owned, had previously released a movie called Independence Day and owned the rights to it, and they had to convince them to give it to them. And it was that speech with that tagline that made the studio go, all right, we gotta call it Independence Day.
It's awesome. Amazing. That's, I mean, it's so good. And then one more thought about Roland Emmerich. I'm not like the hugest disaster movie buff or anything like that, but this one, I don't think that it ever gets better than Independence Day, to be honest with you. I mean, like there are some fun ones.
When you see the trailer for the first time and you when you're before the movie came out and you're seeing the branding of it and the marketing of it, and it's just, you don't even see the spaceship, it's just the shadows going over all, like we kind of mentioned, but it's that something, that's why this movie is so huge and has lasting powers, because of those first sights, because that was truly the first time I feel like we saw that. And it was because of the effects, it looked real, and it was like, holy shit. It was fully realized.
They dared to dream that big. It was like, it's not an alien invasion. It was not an alien invasion movie where they fly in and land, and the robot lumps out and says, oh, I'm going to kill you or whatever.
Right.
You know, or even like aliens, you know, like those ships are big, but you never get the scope of them. Mm-hmm. You know, the Nostromo could be fucking the size of like 18 planets, but we don't know because it doesn't matter. But this is like, holy fuck, like this, it makes them feel so superior to you.
And when they blow up the White House, like, I don't know.
The destruction is crazy.
Yeah.
You know, when you see the ring, like that's the one that gets me, is when it shoots LA and then you just see the big ring of like burned out everything and it just keeps spreading. You're like, damn.
Yeah, they shot those all practically, right? Like with miniatures. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. They built miniatures. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the miniatures are incredible. Like of its time, the special effects are great, and you got to commend them for not like going too hardcore in the CG route. I don't know. I couldn't pick out any heavy CG in this. It looked almost all like traditional practical effects.
It's funny because if you read the reviews at the time, even with Ebert, Siskel, everybody was like mocking this movie for its effects and talking about how it's no better than the effects of Star Wars in 77, and like really kind of gave it shit, which I did not recall.
Interesting. Yeah. I wouldn't knock that for this movie. I think if it had tried to do CG in 96, we would not talk about it the way that we talk about it right now. It would be totally.
Like those guys didn't watch The Last Starfighter.
I feel like they're only 3 years out from getting The Phantom Menace, and I think they'd have a strong opinion on whether or not in 96 they wanted a fully CG alien movie. Yeah. You know, one of the things that I noticed on this rewatch, you guys are talking a lot about the effects, kind of the spectacle, but where I think this movie shines the most is in the performances. I think the performances are actually pretty special, and I think that's why this Roland Emmerich disaster movie works so well, is that a lot of the actors seem to kind of be buying into what this thing is. Like Will Smith obviously is like, you know, he's probably on the Mount Rushmore of blockbuster actors. You know, it's probably like Harrison Ford, Will Smith, now The Rock. And then who do you guys think? Maybe who's one more we throw on there?
Did you say Tom Cruise?
Oh, Tom Cruise.
Yeah, Tom Cruise is that's
Tom Cruise.
I don't think The Rock has earned it yet. I mean, yeah.
Oh, you're crazy.
That was very successful, and the rest are kind of.
I think Jermaine's right.
You think so? You don't think The Rock is on? His name's The Rock. He's already a mount.
No. I think. Listen, I'm not saying that I don't enjoy watching The Rock. I love The Rock. I think that he's incredible in everything that he's in. But is he the level of star as those guys that you mentioned? Not even close.
He makes more money.
I don't want to find myself defending The Rock.
Well, now because but movies make more money, right?
Right, exactly.
I would say he's made a lot of fucking money as a starring.
But I think that's because movies make more money now.
Totally. You know what I mean? Let me put it this. His head might be is smaller than Tom Cruise. And
he's in the top five.
He's in the top five for sure. Who's the other one? Who am I missing?
Yeah, that's a good question.
So who'd you say? Tom Cruise, Will Smith.
And Harrison Ford.
Oh shit, Arnold Schwarzenegger. What the fuck am I saying?
Yeah.
Arnold trumps The Rock. He has not pulled The Rock. He's not Rock status yet. Those are your four. How many? There's four heads on Mount Rushmore, right?
That's pretty good.
Those are your four.
The Rock needs The Rock needs a franchise of his own.
Yeah.
Then he's in that conversation.
That's true. Okay. I'm willing to. I think I'm a little hung up that he's like numero uno now, like whatever he does just makes so much fucking money at the box office. But I raised the white flag to you gentlemen. I hear this point. So we're talking about the performances. I think while I was watching it, I found myself just laughing at those more so that like everybody's just kind of making these fun choices. Like for me, Judd Hirsch like steals this whole fucking movie because he's so good. He works out at my gym. He's a fucking gem of a human being.
Well, you think they don't know what you know? They know. Believe me, they know. She works for the president. They know everything.
They don't know this.
Oh, you're going to educate them, huh? Yeah, so tell me something. Are you so smart? How come you spend 8 years in MIT to become a cable repairman? I'm saying is they got people who handle these things, David. They want HBO, they'll call you. Look at these people. Look. Huh? Vultures. They take and then they go.
They're going faster than we are. Look at this. Well, we're in the fast lane.
I can't go faster. They're cutting me off here.
No one's cutting you off. We're going to get a ticket.
They're getting in front of me. I can't go any faster.
All right. I don't want to argue. Shh. Let's just get there as quickly as
possible.
What's
the rush, huh? You think we'll get to Washington and we'll be there?
And between him, Jeff Goldblum, Will Smith, they're really kind of landing in such a fun, interesting tone. And I think that's where this movie's successful. Jermaine, what are some performances that stick out to you?
Brett Spiner, Robert Loggia. I think Goldblum and Smith are great. I think the actress's name is escaping me, who plays David's ex-wife, who works at the White House.
From Big? Great.
From Big, yeah.
And then, but after
not
that.
The same woman.
It's not the same woman?
No.
Really?
No, it is not. It is not Elizabeth Perkins.
No, it's not. It looks like her, but it's not.
It looks like her, but it's not.
It's not Big, no.
Now that you said it, my brain is not. It was her.
I think those three are good. And then after that, I just love everyone together, especially the one small performances. I like Bill Pullman at times in this, and other times he bugs me, but the script is so good and he's buying in, like you said, and he's so good when he needs to be good. That like that couldn't have been pretty. Like just I hate stuff like that. There's some like the lines that he doesn't do. But like I said, all the minor characters for me are really my favorites. And it is funny to think about Jeff Goldblum as like the super duper nerd in Jurassic, and his new take on it here, where he's a suave motherfucker. You know, he's really kind of badass in this, but also a nerd, and it's really good.
He's still sexy nerding it up. Yo, can I just say, can Harvey Firestein get some love?
Yeah, again.
Harvey Firestein firing on all cylinders, my dude.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. For me, it's that middle tier of people. Even though he's an awful human being, Adam Baldwin in this is fucking awesome. Like, I love him in this. Everything he has to do in this is great.
Adam Baldwin is always the best at this kind of shit.
Oh yeah, and
that's like G.I. Joe guy.
You guys haven't even mentioned Harry Connick Jr.
Oh yeah, of course. Bro.
Come on, amazing. Man. Light the fires and kick the tires.
Can you be kind of like Goose from Top Gun, but not?
But just be Harry Connick Jr. version of that.
They probably were like, "Let's get Harry Connick in case we have a piano scene."
They're like, "Listen, you were great in Little Man Tate that Jodie Foster did. Like, let's see if you can be an action person."
Alex, speaking of piano scenes, little did you know that there was a cut scene of him playing Great Balls of Fire with Will Smith. Cut out of the movie. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, I mean, this is the Top Gun thing. Come on.
I know, I got it.
But for a second here, this was also like sort of a run for Goldblum. Like, this was a moment in time where Goldblum, all of a sudden after Jurassic Park, was like cool.
Well, it's Goldblum and Will Smith. I mean, I feel like Will Smith had blockbusters in like 3 years in a row.
But like, Goldblum, but it was, I was gonna say, Goldblum oddly has this weird, like, sexiness to him that's like, and then you see him now and what he's transformed into now, and it's just like it's a bonkers career.
Listen, I've been up close to that man.
Exactly.
He's sexy, bro. You can't deny it.
He had Jurassic, he had this, and then he started in The Lost World, you know what I mean? He played a Spielberg summer blockbuster, you know, like,
right. I'm gonna throw this out there. I think Jeff Goldblum might be the greatest supporting player in blockbuster movies. I think when Goldblum shows up in a blockbuster, in a way, he pulls as much attention as the star, right? Like, Will Smith is the star of this movie. Goldblum's right there with him. You've got Jurassic Park. He is absolutely the cult iconic favorite. And now all the way up into the Marvel MCU.
Yeah.
Fucking Goldblum shows up and you're like, yo, it's Goldblum. Could you potentially give him that title belt?
I think so, man. I mean, like,
it's tough.
I don't know if he's the best of the best, you know, like but he's definitely like, he's an A+ fucking addition to anything.
Yes.
And always going to make it better.
Especially I just think in a blockbuster, if you can get some Goldblum energy, I think because he's like such an actor's actor. Like, he kind of has the energy of a guy that takes every role he's in a little too seriously. Not like Daniel Day-Lewis seriously, but just like, I've been thinking about my choices here and why I might say this line. It's like, dude, you just say life finds a way. Like, but he always finds a fun way to Goldblum up his choices, and he really pops in this movie to me. Like, I was surprised at how much he was popping in this world. Man. And I was like, man, I'm really on a Goldblum ride this rewatch. He's great.
Yeah, he's awesome, man.
When you guys, on your rewatch this time, what were some of the scenes that, let's start with positive and then maybe we'll talk about some nitpicks, but what are some things that still hold up? Jermaine, like, what were some moments you're like, oh, this still fucking slaps from the first day I saw it to today?
The speech, but my favorite moment in the movie has always been the Black Knights, the entire scene. From let's kick the tires and light the fires. Even when once he gets to El Toro, to when he says that's a close encounter, all of it. And especially after Harry Connick dies and they're going through the trenches or the canyons, is the only time that they play this one piece of score.
Hope you got an airbag.
that should have been the theme to the movie, and it's the best part of the whole. And it's not even on the soundtrack CD. I remember buying the soundtrack to be like, oh, I just want to hear that like 30 seconds, and it happens like an hour into the movie, and it's when they're flying through the thing. So everything there, but I love where he does the speech as the Reverend, and oh god, all of it. Like, and it's very Top Gun. There's a lot of flying in this movie. You kind of forget.
Harry Connick Jr. He's legit good in this movie, and it's a shame that he's only in it for such a short period of time. Right. But
I mean, the Black Knight thing is my big like. Oh man, I love all that.
Harry Connick was really angling for a big movie career, and he never really fully got the leap, did he?
I don't think so.
Well, he got his own daytime talk show, I believe, and that was pretty much what he did.
I mean, maybe that's what he wanted.
I got a co-sign, Jermaine, that the Black Knight's dogfight, the very first one, is probably my favorite scene. And then something that I really love and always look forward to is when they do the whole dissection of the alien and then him taking over the doctor.
No peace.
Release me. Like, that's just so good. All of that is really, really good. Stuff that I really look forward to seeing, and it never fails to get me amped in this movie.
What about you, Steve? What's something that still holds up as being just badass for you?
I mean, to piggyback on Jermaine, I think when I think of Independence Day, I think of Will Smith dragging the alien across the salt flats. And then I also think about him, right? The line that he says is like, that was a close encounter, is when he's got the cigar in his mouth.
Yeah, that's what I call a close encounter.
That's what I call a close encounter. Like that to me is what, when I think of that, like this movie, I think of that. And then I think of the bizarre woman on the top of the building.
Stripper. That was going to be my next question, which was, what type of people are we? Are you the go with the sign to greet the aliens? Or are you fuck this? I'm getting the fuck out of town. Jermaine, what are you? You have a sign, or are you fucking dipping out?
Oh, I'm dipping out, and I'm going to be really angry that I'm stuck in traffic, and I'm going to hide when everybody starts rioting. I'm going to die in the huddled under my car as the flames come right through.
For sure. What about you, Cisco? You signing up, or you getting the fuck out?
I'm the exact same. I'm not fucking with no signs. I don't want no aliens coming down here. I don't care if their intentions are good. Get the fuck out of here. I don't trust you. I've watched too many alien movies to just think that you guys are here for some holistic reason. I doubt it.
Steve, what about you?
My ass is already in Marina Del Rey.
I was
going to
say, Amber's ass has got
already,
you in a bunker.
We're already in Marina Del Rey hijacking a yacht.
Yeah.
And we're out on the water, on the ocean, out in the middle of nowhere. And we'll sail back in and check in and see how things are going in a little while if we're still around.
I'll be the fucking odd guy out. I'm not going fucking to a building parked right underneath the fucking thing, but I might fucking climb up to the observatory and fucking hold up a sign like, hey man, we're cool. If you keep it cool, man, I'll fucking keep it cool. I'm definitely not getting into the line of fire. But I don't know. Steve knows. Even with the pandemic, I was a little like, man, we'll fucking see about this shit. I don't fucking know. I'm only being honest to my true self. I might be like, man, these aliens might be fucking cool. Everybody just take a breath. But the moment they start blasting downtown, my Tesla's charged and I'm the fuck out of here. I'm fucking like, my bad. Like, I don't care if I'm living off Ritz crackers, no toilet paper, and bottles of water for $15, but I'm out. All right. Well, Jermaine, you bring up a good nitpick. We got to talk about the fucking traveling in this movie.
Yeah.
These motherfuckers are getting from New York to DC clean as like they show some traffic, but like not really that much traffic.
But they have
they're
six
all getting everywhere.
They have 6 hours for that one. I'll tell you the one that bothers me.
And they're going opposite traffic. That we was
yeah. They established they're going opposite. They got to get out of the city though, and that's right. Impossible.
Right.
The one that bothers me is. It's at the very end of the movie when they realize they have to shoot at the main thing. They've established that they're 15 miles wide, right? And I know those jets go fast, but how fast do they go 7 miles? You know, and like, so they're like, oh, we got to get across the entire half of the ship. And I'm like, that seems a little.
I wonder how fast a jet flies, because a Southwest airline is doing like 250. So a jet's got to be in the 350.
They might even go faster than that. So yeah. If it's 600 miles an hour, I guess they probably do it in like a minute or two. But yeah. Still, that always bugged me. I'm like, damn, they got to go really far.
Also, I'm sure there's probably some science to like what happens if like 40 fucking ships the size of Manhattan break through the atmosphere at once, probably absolutely eviscerates our fucking planet, pops us like a fucking grape. Yeah, I will say this. This is my first viewing where I don't know how I never fucking put this together. I always thought fucking Jeff Goldblum was always in L.A. too.
Oh, really? I thought
Goldblum was in L.A. Oh. Will Smith was in L.A.
Yeah.
And now that I'm like, wait, I'm a fucking idiot. I thought he fucking went to D.C. I mean, I was 10. I was like 10 when I saw this. But there's something about the way it cuts that always made me think, oh, is Goldblum? Goldblum must be in L.A. The whole thing's in L.A.
standing over Central Park.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, that's kind of a dead giveaway.
Yeah, but I think some of the best.
They play chess in the park.
I think some of my favorite scenes in this movie are the scenes that are him and Judd Hirsch in traffic trying to get to the White House.
Those are the scenes that saved me from maybe not enjoying this rewatch. I was like, no, this is still good. It's just, you have to remember that it's a product of its time. It's also been kind of like not lampooned to death, but sort of mimicked into nothing. Like so many movies have tried to recreate Independence Day. Like, is this the first movie where it's destroy the mothership and they all shut down?
Probably. I mean, there might be another one, I'm sure, but like,
yeah, but this is like the first. Yeah. And I feel like how many fucking movies have just been like, fuck it, do the Independence Day thing where you got to take out the mothership and then they're all done. Like that's like Hollywood. That's like on the whiteboard of things Hollywood does when they don't know what to do with the end of their movie. It's like, just take the Independence Day ending. Okay. Are we buying that Jeff Goldblum fucking just hacks the mothership? Like, no. Let's talk about this computer virus.
Well, that's another thing I noticed in this rewatch. And it's like, all right, so the movie comes out in 96. A couple people have cell phones. There's no real internet. But like 2 years later, most people had cell phones and most people using the internet. Like, it's a movie that's about technology that didn't like look this much further ahead with technology. So you watch it now and he's like, what's that? He pops the CD-ROM in. He's like, it's every phone book. You're like, man, it dates itself so bad.
Yeah.
Like, well, I like when he gets the printout too, and it's all just zeros and ones. And he's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's pattern. It's like, okay.
Yes. I know it's a 1990 movie that wants to be a 2000s movie, but it's really an 80s movie. Like, it's just like, you know, like they get the technology so wrong. So yeah, I never bought that they could like, you know, get into whatever, like, if their technology is so good, they could blow up your whole city. They don't have like a fireball. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, if they've invented interstellar travel, they probably don't have like shitty USB plug-in or whatever the fuck 1999. Like,
yeah, they don't have Windows 95.
Also, like, the aliens didn't at once fucking clock that like there was a signal coming in. Also, they never put together like they haven't upgraded their models. A fucking spaceship in like 60 always. Years. Dude, imagine if we were in a modern, like if you were fucking now, in a military base and a guy pulls in a 57 Chevy, that guy's fucking suspect. You're like, what's with this fella?
We can say though, if it was based on like Earth time, technology doesn't advance that quickly when it comes to like big shit like that, right? Like,
that's true. Planes kind of look like the same as look as planes.
Yeah, I mean, they change a little bit, they've gotten better, they're more comfortable, all that stuff. It does happen, but it's not
like shape, the physics of it are kind of intact,
right.
Fair. We don't know if it's a you know they didn't change, maybe they didn't change the body type, but maybe the engines, the stuff inside is different, you know?
Right.
Yeah, but I feel like if it had like just in like basic sci-fi rules, it probably has some kind of scanning code. Like, you'd think that they'd be like, oh, that's that fucking one that crash landed.
Right. We lost that 70 years ago.
That fucking thing. Remember? God damn it. That's fucking Jimmy shit. Remember Jimmy?
Hanging out down there.
Right.
Jimmy, welcome back, Jimmy.
But yeah, you're the plan at the end is so over the top ridiculous that no, there's not a bit of it that should work. But it goes to what I said. Everything else has failed. So why not just Hail Mary it? You know, the Hail Mary and everything. And you expect them to, like, of course, they're never going to get on the ship. They're never going to, like, hack the thing. They're never going to get out in 30 seconds, you know, like, and they don't think they're going to. Like, it's just, it was the Hail Mary of all plans. And that's why, and you don't think it's going to work. And that's why it's great when it does.
90s blockbusters just loved a kid or person that was a hacker. You always had to have a hacker. You had Jeff Goldblum in this. You got, don't talk to me, man, I'm a hacker, in Jurassic Park. You got fucking John Connor hacking the ATM machine. You got fucking Boris from GoldenEye. It all comes to a head with The Matrix. Like, they fucking just, it's almost as if nobody in Hollywood had ever touched a fucking computer, but every executive on the whiteboards is like, these computers are going to be huge. Just get us a hacker in there.
Isn't the villain in Die Hard 4 a hacker?
Wait. Yes. Wait. Guys, when are we going to do the Midnight Movie Club of hackers?
Hackers. Oh, yeah. Masterminds? Hackers. Remember Masterminds with fucking Patrick Stewart?
Yeah, it's not quite hackers though. Come
on. Yeah, I've never seen hackers.
Oh,
it's awesome.
Oh, I can't wait.
Hack the plan, baby. Hack the plan.
I want to watch that movie, but I want you to just grab the clip where I go. I've never seen hackers, and Jermaine goes, "It's awesome." That's I want to have that ready for after I watch hackers to see if I can fully trust Jermaine's choice in hackers. Are there any other weird nitpick? Okay, well.
I have one. I have another.
Go ahead.
The fireworks at the end, they're all excited about. Aren't those just like flaming pieces of an alien ship that are just going to be super destructive to everything again anyway?
Yeah, everybody's fucked. Like, downtown LA is fucked at this point.
It's already gone.
Planet. It's as big as the moon that they blew up with a nuclear bomb. It's just falling.
Yeah.
Shouldn't those just all burn up and impact, really? Yeah. I mean, if they're small enough, you would think, right?
Unless they've whittled down into a flaming ball of magma.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure they got into some of the logistics in the masterpiece Independence Day too. We're going to get to that. Don't worry. That movie's not off the fucking hook. That's also part of the reason why that movie hurts this movie for me in a few ways. Excuse me. I'm going to cough.
I have a weird question. Is there a world, maybe this has been addressed. It probably has. I know I'm not this original. But is there a world where Captain Heller becomes Jay from Men in Black? Like Jay is just Captain Heller who's had his mind wiped, and now he's, you know, teaming up with Tommy Lee Jones to fight against the aliens that he already wiped out once.
But he's got a family in this, so unless they die, which is the opposite of what happens in Independence Day 2, where he dies and everyone else lives, but.
I'm not taking into account Independence Day.
Right. If you want to stitch them together, I'm good with it because I love the first Men in Black and even the second one to an extent.
But so by this theory, they flash everybody. Everybody gets flashed and we like start over.
Including Captain Heller. Captain
and the kid, done.
Yep.
That's the ones you got to get. Yeah.
All right. Okay. I could buy into this fun little fan stitch. I'm trying to think there's one more. Oh, okay. Are we really buying that, like, the first lady just bumps into everybody and then they all go to, like, that? It's well, one that of those was, things.
That was going to be one of the ones that I brought up, which was, is Vivica finding the first lady that easily?
Yeah.
No, of course not.
Hundreds of thousands of dead bodies everywhere.
But they are both in Los Angeles. True. That is established.
Right.
Yeah. So we know how easy it is to just bump into somebody during a panic in Los Angeles.
she's looking for people.
She's found other survivors. So we'll give her
right. That. Right. And the dog sniffed the first lady.
The
up.
Dog oh, does.
It's completely,
you're right.
It's completely ridiculous, of course. But like, you know, they do the bare minimum just to keep the story moving. You know, it's like,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, total, absolutely worthy nitpick. Yeah.
Okay. So we're nearing into the 47, 50 minute mark. I would be remiss if I didn't just bring up Independence Day 2. Now, who here saw it in the theater? I saw Independence Day 2 in the theater.
I saw it in the theater.
You see it in the theater, Steve?
I did not.
Cisco?
I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
I double featured. I was very at the Arclight in the Dome. I was so excited. I double featured. I watched this and then went right into 2. And I have the only time I was ever more disappointed to walk out of a movie was Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
At what point in after coming out of the first one and going into this other one, at what point do you realize, like, oh, this is not good?
I swear to God, Steve, I reviewed it for my website, and I went and read my review today, which was kinder than it should have been, and I don't remember any of it. I've completely wiped the movie from my memory, and I was looking at photos, and I'm like, wait, William Fichter was in that movie? Like, I completely wiped it from my memory. I read the review, and I'm like, damn, I kind of want to watch this now. Because I don't remember. Like, I remember Phantom Menace. The second they went under the water, I was like, what the fuck is wrong? But Independence Resurgence, I do not remember the moment. But I do know that at some point, I'm like, this is just no
I'm still trying to figure out why I know the moment for me.
I can tell you my moment. It's when fucking Judd Hirsch is on that fucking boat. And he rides a tsunami from like the port of New York to fucking New Mexico. I was like, they fucking took the travel rules of Independence Day One and they managed to fuck them up even further. Are you fucking kidding me? He fucking rides that boat. And then they're like, they roll up on the bus and they're like, hey, bro, you need a fucking ride to Area 51. It's insane.
But the bones are there though. Dude. Like the idea of what the world would be like after this movie. Like,
and we had, of course, they would come back. Then.
Like, it's so, yeah. And they're going to come back. We're going to get ready for them, but we're going to use their technology. And that stuff is all so good. And oh, you know what? I have the moment. And it's before the movie even came out. It's when Roland Emmerich didn't cast Mae Whitman as her own character.
Right.
Maika Monroe, who is good, but you had Mae Whitman right there. Like she's
act.
The same actress, and she's like, still, she can act and still acts. It's not like they're trying to bring back the kid to play, you know, like the little rascal. She's an actress.
They blatantly tried to pull a Michael Bay situation there with that, yeah, that casting. And I don't know. It was one of those things where I feel like Roland just bet the dice and thought the deal was going to happen with Will, and Will.
Yeah.
And that's how they got Jeff.
Will read that script.
And that's how they got Gold. I'm willing to bet that script was. And that's the thing, is it's so obvious that they went right up to the point when they needed to start filming that they scrambled with the rewriting of the new character with the son and just trying to. And I think had whatever the original script was that had Will and had Jeff Goldblum back, which I don't think Jeff Goldblum would have signed up to come back to do it. If he didn't think Will was coming back, you think so?
Jeff Goldblum will take that paycheck. You see those apartments.com commercials? Come on now.
Yeah.
I think you're probably right. I think the movie's
in fairness, directed. Those are directed by Taika.
Are they?
Yeah. That's part of it. Guarantee you, Tiger's like, hey, buddy, do you want to come do an apartments.com commercial? He's like, yeah, man.
I'm sorry. Hold on. Is that 100% true? All of those apartments.com commercials.
I don't know about all of them, but I know that he directed the first couple.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've never heard that before. Mm-hmm. That's nuts.
Pretty wild, right? He helped, like, this is right after Ragnarok, when Taika was still like, wasn't the hottest director in fucking Hollywood, but like, cause I only know because my wife had a callback for the first one and Taika was the director in the call.
Wow.
I wouldn't have known that, but so it's possible Taika's like, fuck man, no one's supposed to know that I'm fucking cashing checks on apartment.com commercial, but there's no way they get Goldblum unless Taika is directing
those. That makes sense.
Yeah. But I do think though, I'm with you, Jermaine. I think that Goldblum comes back with or without Will Smith, but I do think it would be it wouldn't help the movie even if Will Smith doesn't come back. Like,
I don't know. Steve probably knows better than I do with this, but maybe Will Smith read the script and he was like,
eh. Well, he had the script for that and he had the script for Suicide Squad and he went with Suicide Squad.
Right. But I'm just saying,
a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that script is better than the movie too, but like, I'm just saying like, maybe, yeah, I know that they had to rewrite it to get him out of it, but, or they had two scripts, but maybe the script with him was not good enough. You know,
If I had to guess, and just kind of like watching the trajectory of his career, is that he probably wanted more creative input and more of a like executive producer role on it, like he does on almost everything, where he's just like, he's getting back end money, big back end money, and they probably were just like, we could do it without you.
I'm sure. Well, money always plays a role, so I would imagine that was definitely true. So, yeah.
Well,
Oh boy. Independence Day 2 brought the house down, Alex.
I'm just saying, listen, but that
it's okay, funny because I just pulled up an article from 2019. Roland Emmerich wishes he hadn't made Independence Day Resurgence after Will Smith's exit.
See, let me tell you, I'm gonna be that meme.
Oh, I forgot the Hemsworth kid was in it.
You can't hate that movie if you never watched it.
Well, I mean, but the truth is, the only reason I bring it up is that sometimes you go in and you can kind of fucking break stuff if you're not careful. If you go in and you start fucking around.
So Emmerich says, I just wanted to make a movie exactly like the first, but then in the middle of production, Will opted out because he wanted to do Suicide Squad, Emmerich told Yahoo Movies in a recent interview. I should have stopped making the movie because we had a much better script. After I had to really fast cobble together another script, and I should have just said no, because all of a sudden I was making something I criticized myself, a sequel.
Interesting.
It's easy to blame me on that, but come, I think it's a lot of different reasons. It's easy to blame on Will Smith when he's the big star and you take him out, but yeah, I mean, the movie's...
I'd also say, with respect to Roland Emmerich, like, is, you know, he hasn't made great movies since Independence Day. So
I like 2012.
Well, yeah, but
one's okay. Even before, like, Universal Soldier's good and Stargate's good. I mean, I know some people think they're great.
I didn't realize he did Universal Soldier.
Yeah, that was like his first big movie, and then after that, like, I don't know, right?
Well, it's like all of the stars aligned for this movie in such a way for it to become what it is.
Yes.
And then, like, he went on to make movies that were like this, but without all of that stuff.
Yeah.
I would also throw out, too, like, around the time of Independence Day Resurgence, Will is, and I feel like he kind of still is, kind of refinding that Will Smith mojo. Like, this is around the time of that... What was that weird movie where he played the younger version of himself and he was like fighting himself in the Gemini?
That's an M. Night.
Gemini Man. And then you've got, there's just an Suicide Squad. There's just a couple of like.
Well, no, prior to that was the.
What's the M. Night one he did with his kid?
Yeah.
Oh, After Earth.
Yeah. After Earth, yeah.
After Earth. Yeah, there's just a couple of like.
He did the Netflix one too.
Yes,
Bright. The other David Ayer movie.
I was gonna say
Cisco's favorite, Max Landis.
So I'm not here to like say, oh, what is Will Smith doing with his career? But I think if you look a little at that trajectory, you kind of go, all right, you know, he's definitely like, he's still kind of trying to, it's hard to be an action star,
buddy. He's got a whole empire now on YouTube, and he's going the route of the new way.
He produces Cobra Kai because he bought basically the rights to the Karate Kid to make the remake, you know?
Yeah, so. I mean, yeah. Listen, Will Smith is, again, I put the motherfucker on the Mount Rushmore, like, no question. Like, it's not a criticism of his career. I just, thinking about Independence Day 2 Resurgence, I'm baffled that Will would be like, that one's not for me, but all these other ones are going to fucking keep me crushing it. It's like, ooh. Will, it might be time to start pulling the Harrison Ford move where you start revisiting.
I mean, you know, he also turned down Django.
In The Matrix.
So, you know, he's turned down movies.
Which he's got some pretty funny videos on YouTube. Or whatever. Explaining why he's turned down some of these roles.
I think, but that's fine. And I think now he's changed that. For him to come back for Bad Boys for Life.
Yep.
I think was sort of like a big thing. In his career, and I think he's gonna try to make another one of those again now. So yeah.
What would we like to see? What Will Smith gems would we like to see get an addition to the franchise? I'd love to see a Men in Black with him. Another Men in Black would be great.
I'll be honest, I didn't mind Men in Black 2 or 3. I think I actually enjoyed both of those. One is still my favorite, but I would see another one.
Mm-hmm.
4 is very bad.
Yeah. That's the one with Chris Hemsworth, right?
Yes.
The one that doesn't have him and Tommy Lee Jones.
Damn, and so basically, pattern here is Hemsworth shows up in a sequel to a Will Smith movie.
Yeah, I was like, both Hemsworth have failed at the Will Smith sequels.
Stop fucking around.
Oh, man. We'll never get it because it can't happen. But
So Jermaine, are you here to tell us that Will Smith's going to appear in the next season of The Mandalorian?
Yeah, right.
I don't know about that. Will Smith would probably
my code right here.
I feel like Will Smith could Will Smith. I think he might be too famous to jump into Star Wars.
Yeah, I think so.
I think he's too. I think Steve's like, oh yeah. I'm like, nah, man. I wouldn't mind. I push back.
I wouldn't mind him in a Marvel movie.
A Marvel movie, however, I would be totally pro.
He already got recast out of his DC character.
Let me put it to you this
Can
way.
Can we put Hancock in Marvel?
If you,
Hancock is underrated.
That's yeah, Hancock is good. Hancock is good.
I recently rewatched.
I've never seen it.
Me too.
I wouldn't mind. This would be like a left field thing for him, but I wouldn't mind seeing him be a villain in a Marvel movie.
Like a villain in Moon Knight or Black Panther or
whatever.
Like give him a bunch of dots like Josh Brolin. Let him be like some like crazy big monster or something. That might be kind of cool.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I feel like, listen, guys, we celebrated our Independence Day with maybe the most internationally celebrated American infused disaster fucking spectacle that is Independence Day. Jermaine, any final thoughts as we close out this conversation?
No, I mean, like I said, I loved rewatching it again with a little bit more of a critical eye. And the next time I watch it, I probably won't even think about that. I will just look forward to my favorite moments and enjoy the huge spectacle. And it really does bring me back to like that summer of 96, Advance Tickets, sitting in that movie theater. I had to pee so bad at the end of that movie, but I was like, this almost over. I know. And when that spaceship blew up, I remember like going like this in the theater, just arms up cheering. And I think about that every time I watch it. And so, there's a lot of nitpicks. There's some weird stuff here and there, but yeah, man, this movie means a lot to me. I really love it.
And when you ran to the urinal at the end of the movie, you went, "Hey boys, I'm back." And you just started fucking pissing all over the fucking bathroom. And I was like, "Oh, fuck, this guy fucking love that movie." Cisco, any final thoughts on Independence Day?
I love it. Even it might not be perfect, but I absolutely love it. I get misty every time the first lady dies. Goldblum and Will Smith doing their thing really get it for me every time. So I'm glad that we got to do this one with you, Jermaine. Thank you for choosing it. I thoroughly enjoyed watching it again, and I'll probably watch it again maybe this weekend.
Steve, are you feeling better after this convo about Independence Day?
You know, after hearing Jermaine talk about all like having this rewatch and sort of breaking down all this stuff that he did, I got to tell you, I was wrong. I was wrong to the point where I heard Jermaine be so eloquent that I went, please don't pick me, Alex, because I'm not going to be so eloquent about my qualms with it. I really can't sit here and talk about bad acting for 10 minutes.
Well, it's hard to talk about bad acting in a movie where it's like they're downloading a virus into a mothership.
Exactly. Well, and that's the thing is like all of a sudden I'm like, damn. You know,
Randy Quaid's like a Vietnam veteran who was abducted by aliens and gets
playing himself. But I can't wait to revisit it actually again this weekend. And Cisco, I will say, you brought up First Lady dying. I have to say, pretty good, impactful, emotional moment for a wackadoodle popcorn movie.
It's got some heart that kind of
gives it some grounding there. That's really good. I can't wait to rewatch it. I'm really thankful that Jermaine came back to join us again for another one of these. And, what about you, Alex?
You know, I was like, I think I was somewhere in the middle, right? I was in a comfortable middle part of the spectrum. On my rewatch, I thought, yeah, this movie it's just so 1996. And I don't know if it's resonating, but hearing Jermaine speak about kind of watching it through the prism of 2020. That's a really interesting approach to take because the movie is so hopeful about how we would handle a situation like this. And I think when you look at it like that, it kind of like, you got to give the movie some snaps. Like that's a pretty tough thing to accomplish. And it's hard to make like, you get emotional over silly stuff like a presidential speech where like a bunch of crop dusters are going to fly fucking F-15s towards a ship the size of the moon. Like when you really like break it down, it's a great little ride, and it's a fantastic blockbuster. So, Jermaine, I think you chose the perfect movie for July 4th. If the people want to find your article on Independence Day, where can they find it online?
Yeah, you can find it on io9.com, and I'll definitely be tweeting it out on at Jermaine Lucier, my full name.
Radical. Cisco and Steve, where can the people find you online?
Instagram and Twitter, Cisco Kid with 2D77.
At Rex Manning on Twitter, and find me on Letterboxd.
You can find me on Letterboxd. And with that being said, guys, we'll see you next time on BSR. Later.
What's up, guys? I'm here at Pixar. I'm about to go in, start working on a collaboration project with Pixar.
Just kidding, man. I don't play that soft little baby shit, man. That's Satan all day, that evil Satan stuff, heavy metal shit, man. I don't fuck around with little baby shit like that.